Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it.
Not very many people think of Astoria, Oregon as a whaling city. The sinking of the whaling ship Maine on the Columbia River Bar in 1848, quite a long time ago, nipped plans for a fleet in the bud, and that was the end of Astoria's whaling industry, except for one small whaling venture launched there in 1961, that is. And it could have been the first of many, but wasn't. Anyway, here's how that went down. Local processing company Bio Products put the deal together. An enormous 90mm harpoon gun purchased from a Norwegian whaling operation was mounted on a large fishing vessel called the Tom and Al, owned by brothers Frank and Eben Parker, and it was sent out to sea to chase sperm whales. The big creatures were then brought back to Astoria and butchered out. The 1961 venture was more than a bit bizarre, looked at from a modern perspective. It was a coming together of the need of Oregon mink growers for large volumes of cheap protein and the need of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration for large volumes of whale oil. According to Frank's son, Frank Parker Jr., a big part of the reason the Parkers were hunting whales was the space program. Whale oil is an unusual substance. It can withstand extreme hot and cold conditions without breaking down or gelling up. So as NASA ramped up its space program efforts, it was buying whale oil and paying plenty for it. By 1963, though, new synthetic oils had been developed to get that job done, and the prices for whale oil plummeted. Whaling, even with modern implements, was a tough way to make a living, even with NASA buying the oil. With that profitable customer out of the market, Bioproducts cut the prices it was paying the Parkers. It started to not make as much sense to run the boat. Then, apparently really feeling the pinch, Bioproducts asked the Parkers to buy the harpoon gun. Quote, "There was not enough profit for us to do so," Frank Jr. recalled. "They replaced the 90mm with a 60mm, and it turned out to not be effective. I remember being out with them on a trip, and the harpoon bounced off the whale." You might think the discontinuation also had something to do with public relations. From a modern perspective, the whole idea is just breathtakingly unlovely. Killing an animal as big and charismatic as a whale to feed something as nasty as a mink, with the ultimate goal of killing the mink and turning it into a fur coat for some uber-rich person in Manhattan? Surely that plan was a stinker even 50 years ago, right? Not so much, Frank Jr. says, not in 1961. Quote, "There was really no negative feedback back then about hunting and killing whales," he said. "There was still a small shore-based operation near San Francisco. A flenser, that's a whale butcher, was hired from there. It was definitely a different time and different attitude. Local schools brought busloads of kids during the fall of 62 to view the operation. The University of Oregon and Oregon State sent researchers out with the boat and took samples at the shore site." Today, of course, Astoria and other Oregon seaports do a brisk business taking folks out onto the ocean to see the whales run. The idea of taking a shot at one seems utterly ludicrous, but for anyone who wants to see how they did it back in the era of commercial whale hunting, the harpoon cannon is on display. Looks to be the 60mm model, not the 90, along with a couple of the harpoons it fired and the exploding heads deactivated, of course, in the town of Hammond, just seaward from Astoria and Warrenton. It's hard to imagine what it must have been like to be a whale getting shot with one of those things. This article was first published on August 8th of 2011, under the headline, "Space Age Whalers Help Grow Fur Coats and Put a Man on the Moon." Key sources include works by Robert Lloyd Webb, Don Marshall, Cheryl Todd, and the personal recollections of Frank Parker Jr.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most of them are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, etc., but at least two of them are Offbeat Oregon history type stuff. Check them out if you're so inclined. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.